Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the My Life, Your Life Together podcast. Super excited for this one. As you can tell lately, we've done a few of these remote recordings with guests, and we're excited just to bring another one here with Joseph, who we met through a Facebook group for podcasters. And I've learned a little bit about him, and Zach and I are both excited just to kind of have, you know, hour or so conversation with him about our, you know, his background, our backgrounds. I'm not going to get too far ahead of it, but what drew me to kind of message him was he had this like amazing post on Facebook looking for a guest. And like, I was reading it and it was, you just things you've accomplished in your life have that carry so much meaning and really touch the hearts of a lot of people I know. Like, you're in healthcare, you've been a nurse for, I don't want to say longer than I've been alive, but you've been a nurse for a long time. So I think we're going to have a great time here. Joseph, give us a little bit about you. Like I said, I know you're in healthcare, but, background, upbringing, and then we'll kind of dive into some different avenues of what you're doing lately, because you're a very busy man from what I see.
Well, thank you for having me a part of the show. And thank you that my story kind of grabbed you. So I grew up in East Baltimore, right near the famous Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Nice.
And I grew up in a home that alcohol was present. And I'm the youngest of eight siblings. And I saw alcohol, and I saw that when these bottles got on the table, when people came to have a good time, that it started out as a good time, but then things went pretty left. And I would often talk to the matriarch of the family and really just plead, you know, like, why do we have to have these things? And my mom agreed to not allow me to see her that way growing up, and that she would stop. And she eventually did. I probably was a little boy, probably was like 10 or so. And she gave her life to the Lord and started going to a church in West Baltimore, became an usher there, and took me along. So one thing I had learned real early that that God was really good, and that he stopped my mother from drinking. So
nice.
Yeah, I didn't know anything else about God. I knew that he was able to convince her to stop drinking.
Yeah.
But as I went on as a teenager, I had friends who drank and just was really curious about it. And one day just drank myself into a blackout. And the one thing I know about, I was in this blackout because I had a great friend who recorded it and allowed me to listen to it a couple of days later. And it was a pretty awful experience to just be talking out of your mind and doing things and not being able to store new memories to even know that you didn't and said all those things.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that's, it's a weird, scary thing for people. And I mean, there's some people that chase that feeling. And then there's some people who, it seems like you kind of had the opposite reaction. Like it spooked you and you were like, I don't know if I want to be doing that again. Is that right? Like, was it a one and done kind of thing, or did you struggle with it back and forth?
I never got drunk again. I mean, I learned that if you drink a lot, you will become out of your mind. So I casually drank, and it was mainly just to be a part of the group, just to be a part of the club scene or bar scene.
Yeah.
But I didn't like that. I really couldn't dance until all the alcohol wore off. So I got the idea that, hey, you know what? I really don't have to drink if it slows down me being able to have a good time dancing. And mm-hmm. I was a high school half miler, one of the top in the city. So I had a lot of energy, 17, yeah. 18, 19.
That's awesome.
So I was one and done as far as blacking out or passing out from alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then strangely, I got into the field of nursing at 18. I thought I wanted to be electrical construction worker. And even got into the field as an apprentice. But something inside me just didn't register that I wanted to work with my hands. Mm-hmm. So I left the field and just explored. We had a program in Baltimore called Manpower. So I went there and talked with a social worker, and she directed me to be an EMT worker or LPN. And the EMT course came up. I was too young. And then as a default, I decided to be an LPN and went on to be an RN.
Nice. That's awesome.
So growing up, you mentioned that you grew up very near to the Johns Hopkins yes. Hospital. Did that have any influence in you making that decision to pursue nursing?
I don't think it did. I mean, as kids, we would always marvel or be in awe of all the cars with different license plates from all the different states. We would mm-hmm. go around and pick the cars, because I guess people came from all over to work or go to school at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah.
But far as nursing, it was really never on my mind as a kid. When I did talk with the lady at Manpower, what she found was that I really loved family. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, you have a real passion for family and, you know, you should work with people. And I think that came about because as the drinking stopped in my house, we got together, but there was no more alcohol. There were no more bottles on the table. Mm-hmm. So I think I just kind of loved that idea, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it was kind of a love of family and working with people that shifted you towards healthcare.
I think so. I think all those things impacted me. And my mom, she started working like at a nursing home when mm-hmm. I was a teen. And she would cook food. She would observe the people taking their medicine. She would wash and clean them. And it turned out that the owner was actually using her for more than what she really was qualified to do. And he ended up having to pay back money. I mean, she was doing everything, you know. And I would go with her on a Saturday and see that. So I think all those things probably played a role in just watching, you know, an example of someone really, you know, care for folks and do. And she was no way qualified to do all that, but he had her doing it.
Well, so I work in healthcare currently. I started out in nursing school. I started out at like a local college here taking prereqs for nursing when I was 16, actually. But at the time, my brother was in nursing school. My mother had left teaching to go back to nursing school. Two of my best friends were in nursing school. Like everybody I knew and their mom. Literally, my mom was in nursing school. Okay. So I felt like it was, you know, I was 16 at college and everybody was like, just go do it. It'll be fine. And so I got into the program and I got through nursing too. And I didn't have the enjoyment that other people were having, but I really enjoyed the healthcare aspect. So currently I'm going on 10 years of being an EEG tech for the neurology department at the local medical center here. And now I work at a doctor's office doing it outpatient. And I really like both. Like I learned a lot at the hospital.
Okay.
the outpatient stuff, I get to develop relationships with patients that I see often. I bring that up because, I mean, one of the biggest things that I saw for you is your outpatient work in a certain specialty of nursing that you kind of combined your experience from childhood into now, you know, something that pretty big in the Baltimore area. And even to go what you were saying with, you know, getting to see your mother care for people. I mean, you, given what you do, and I'm going to let you share a little bit about it. I mean, you have that same care in you, and I would imagine you enjoy developing those relationships with people too, right?
I do. my mother was from Durham, North Carolina, and she had a way about her. Like if she saw someone carrying their bags, a woman carrying their bags, she would make you go and carry the bag and till she got to her home, you know, open the door, always say thank you. She just ingrained that in her children. And, she even before she even worked at that nursing home, she was always about trying to help someone and just trying to show love. I think she was just raised like that. And so I picked that up. But then when I sort of got into the field of nursing and eventually got into the field of addiction treatment nursing, the bells start going off. You know, I was just like, hey, you've seen this before. And, you know, you stood there with tears, you know, asking her to stop. And so now in the field of addiction treatment, about 28 years now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So being able to just help people struggling with opioid addiction, cocaine, alcohol, marijuana, nicotine, all of that. It really, each and every day I do it, it's just amazing. It's like, wow, here's this 10-year-old. Here was this 10-year-old kid, and now, you know, decades later, he's got an opportunity to make an impact, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I feel so, what's the word? Gratified, yeah.
So you went to school for nursing. Did you have an idea of what type of nursing you wanted to pursue when you first started, or was that something that developed as you kind of grew in the field and got experience?
It developed. I came out of LPN school in 1985, and I went on an assignment in 1986 at a drug research unit out at Bayview, which is like the biggest research for addiction and chemical dependency in our town. It actually is a branch off from the narcotic farm in Louisville, Kentucky. And it was a place where they studied drug addiction, and gang members and all would go there. Some people could voluntarily go, some people the court sent there. But it was called a narcotic farm, and it closed in 73. And they actually branched out to Bayview Medical Center and continued doing research there. But I got this assignment, and I was working there, and I must have done like 6 months, and the agency moved me to another assignment. But the manager there really liked my work, and she got a hold of the agency and asked me, offered me a job with the National Institute of Drug Abuse. So I was happy because I was doing like long-term care nursing homes. I really wasn't happy doing it, you know. So I got an idea to do, I got an opportunity to do research, drug research, and it was good. I wasn't passionate about it because in research, you know, you're giving drugs, people sometimes have awful effects from it. Some people get, you know, highs from it. Some people have withdrawals. So I wasn't really moved to do it, but I was learning. and stayed a little while then until about 88 or so. And I came back to it in the 90s for residential treatment for about 3 years. But I, to answer your question, no, I wasn't really sure with what I wanted to do, but somehow yeah. I kept getting guided. kept getting in some ways.
You were making directed. These turns and you finally found
Yeah. Somehow I believe, God was just orchestrating my steps and trying to get me to the place where I needed to be. And I think finally what made me conclude that this is what I wanted to do was in 04. My mom had passed in 04, and there was an opportunity to be the director of nursing at the at this residential treatment center called Gaudencia. And I didn't want to take it at first. I was like, I'm still grieving my mom, but my wife is like, go ahead, it'll be a good way to find something else to do with yourself. And at that point, I found out how you could be a certified addictions nurse. And it just hit me. I said, this is what you're supposed to do. like you're yeah. supposed to get certified. You're supposed to learn all you can about addictions. You're supposed to really make a difference. And so I did that. And from there, I got into some book writing, and the journey just keeps on moving,
Yeah.
Wow. It's really interesting to hear you talk about your childhood and then getting into this field of addiction treatment, because I'm sure, like you were saying, you kept on kind of taking turns and felt like you got guided.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But it's interesting to see that it almost was part of like your personality, even as a young kid, mm-hmm. With how you responded and what you were able to do for your mom as a child. And that almost just grew and seems like it grew and developed more and more as you got older and got into your career. It's interesting to see, over your childhood and then into your adult and professional career, it was all kind of one path, it looks like.
To tag on to that. It's so we're both Christian as well.
Okay.
And so it's not often do you see like a pattern that God has put in place for somebody's life. Like I can look at, my history or even my parents' history and be like, we kind of like hopped all over the place or whatever. But I think that was one thing that took me to your story. Cause when I read it, I didn't know you're a Christian. I don't think there was anything in the post about it, but like seeing you grew up that way, mm-hmm. you transit. And like, that was like a cord that followed you everywhere in your life or something. And I appreciate that because it just gives perspective of how different everybody's life can be. To us, like looking and hearing your story, it's like, oh, of course he was going to end up as a certified, addictions nurse. But you're like, well, I did this, I did that. I didn't know what I was going to do. But so I enjoy the humor of the Lord, so to speak, in instances like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, because you brought up book writing. And
yes.
Now, did you just have a new book come out, or is it coming out?
No, it's out. It's okay. It's on Amazon.com. I have copies all in my closet and in my book bag and in my trunk. And it's called All Those Bottles, Alcohol, I'm Telling on You.
Huh. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming it deals mostly with like alcoholism, or does it touch on kind of all forms of addiction?
It's all about alcohol. It starts out talking about how I first heard about alcohol. We had a bar right down the street from my mm-hmm. house called Jimmy's Bar, and I talk about how I saw that as a child, how it was a place to meet for the people in the neighborhood, and then I talk about how alcohol got from Jimmy's bar and got up the street to my home. Mm-hmm. And I talk about my blackout. I talk about my my friends growing up and being in the clubs, and how alcohol, I thought, made me feel like I count. And then I just go into tons of questions for people to just think about alcohol, you know, just think about, is it impacting you? Do you have a problem? What is alcohol? What is hepatitis? Inflammation of your liver and all that stuff. And I'm really just trying to take the reader to a place where they can think about it and just make some better decisions. And I'm also trying to speak to the loved one, you know, the person on the other side. I was the person on the other side. I was the child looking at my mom and the other people in the home, and how even though you don't drink, you know, you impact people around you.
That's
what the book is about. All about alcohol, totally.
Nice.
So as you learned about, you know, being a certified addiction specialist, how difficult was that transition going from, you know, your job as a LPN to getting certified? Was that a difficult process? Was there a lot more schooling involved? What was that like?
Yeah. So I was an LPN for 10 years, and then I became an RN back in like 95. I became certified in addictions like in 2004, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had been nursing in some other areas, but around 2004, 2005 is when I really start taking it seriously. And there was an agency that there was a hospital in Baltimore, in downtown Baltimore. And the nurses who worked there were all certified. And the manager there encouraged me to do the same. So I agreed, and it really was worth it. It's a funny story behind it. I thought that I had done addiction so much that I didn't really need to study and prepare. So I took the test and failed the first time. So there was some language that I had no idea what they were talking about. So I literally had to go and take two college courses at a local college just to, you know, be up to speed with some of the testing questions.
Okay.
So after I did the courses, I had a better idea. I took the test and I actually passed. And so I felt confident at that point. But it's just funny how cocky I was, you know, just thinking that
I already knew it.
Yeah, I already knew it, you know. But I learned. And
I like you sharing that. I mean, I had to pass my EEG boards when I took them. It was two parts. So part one was like 400 questions. Part two was 400 questions. And so I was new to the field. I had no idea what it was before I worked in it. But I would take like practice quiz after practice quiz after practice quiz. And then I finally took like, there was like a 1200 question practice exam. And I was like, I think I got this. And okay. I remember taking it and I was like, where the heck did they pull these questions from? Like, these weren't on any of the quizzes I've been doing. I got some abysmal score, like a 38 or something.
Wow.
I was like, wow, this sucks. And so, you know, I did practiced and studied a little bit more and was terrified going into my board exam. And this is just a funny story of, you know, what was I, 21-year-old? Yeah, 21-year-old. I go to the testing center and you get a scrap sheet of paper a pencil. The test is on the computer, and they gave you a ruler. And so I get through the test, and I didn't use the ruler once. And so my friend was taking it like the same day. And so we met up after. I was like, what did you use the ruler for? And she was like, that's how you're supposed to measure the height of the waveform on the screen. I was like, oh, I completely just guessed on that. I said, I was wondering how I was supposed to measure it. It didn't click with me to use a ruler on a computer screen, like a physical object to a digital object. And that's so, actually pretty funny. 8 weeks later, I get my breakdown in the mail. All six measurement questions, I was 0 for 6.
But, oh, wow.
But I still passed. Cause it was such a small, six questions out of 400.
Right.
But it still cracks me up thinking about it. Just like, I always think tests are out to get me.
That's funny.
So once you got your new certification stuff, what did you go on from there for your nursing career? What did you go into? How did that change your career?
Yeah, I always wanted a BS degree in nursing, so I did go back to school again. For a four-year degree at Notre Dame University of Maryland. So that was always a goal of being able to have a four-year degree, because a lot of professions feel like nurses can get a AA degree and still be a nurse, and while everyone else has to do 4 years. And so I just felt like I wanted 4 years, mm-hmm. just like everyone else had accomplished. And it was really a good choice, because I learned some things with a four-year degree that I didn't learn in the two-year nursing program. So it was worth it. It was worth accomplishing that task. So yeah, so that's what I went on to after that. And pretty much I'm content with nursing. I can't believe now I'm actually talking about retiring. I'm going to go to a Social Security workshop this month. I mean, it's not any time real soon, but probably in the next 8 to 9 years, I would like to do that. And I still will do some teaching. I do have a side business called McCray Lectures, and I give about two or three talks a week. So I would like to still do that. But giving people a whole 8 hour, 10 hour day, I want to kind of get past that in the next 8 to 9 years.
Yes. Is other lectures you give healthcare based, or do you talk on a few different things?
I stick to addiction. And I will talk about mental health, mental illness, because I did work as a psych nurse before I got into the field of, strongly got into the field of addiction treatment. And I did some inpatient psych. Didn't do real well with it. Actually, it was a wake-up call. I faced a burnout. And I didn't really know what it was until I actually sat down and talked with someone, and I just discovered that I was doing the wrong line of work, and I guess because I'm a tall guy and look like I can, help hold down someone who's agitated, whatever. It wasn't a passion to be in that field. I think I got more anxiety than the patients did sometimes when they got really riled up. So so I kind of learned that, hey, you know what, this is not for you, because even in the midst of working in inpatient psych, we would get substance users, and I would always get the patients who had a substance use issue, and sometimes they could be 8-7 patients at a time, because they just felt like Joe knows how to deal with them, So it helped me to really see that this is not for you, for nursing. So did I answer that question? Sometimes I'm not sure.
Yeah.
No, that answered it.
And right. So I'm curious, especially with you saying that you did some mental health nursing. Do you see a large correlation there between mental health issues and addiction issues?
Yes, yes. I would say for the patients that I'm taking care of now in an outpatient setting, probably anywhere from 75 to 85% of them have a mental illness. Yeah, a good proportion have it. And even when I go out in the community and give talks, in the audience, there's still a large percentage, three quarters of the people dealing with mental illness, and chiefly depression, bipolar, a few schizophrenics might be in the audience. But dual diagnosis is pretty common. It's hard to find someone with a substance use and they not have a mental illness. I had a patient one time say, if you use drugs, you got to be crazy. So that was her way of saying everyone who is using is likely to have some type of mental health issue.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's rare to find someone who is an alcohol, who has what the terminology now is an alcohol use disorder, a cocaine use disorder, opioid use disorder, and not have a mental health diagnosis. Hmm. And sometimes we'll get patients who will get tested or they'll get an assessment by the psychiatrist just to see, because sometimes they've never been diagnosed, but they gave us information that had pretty high scores that may be a likelihood that there might be some mental health issues going on. But you always have to be careful and wait till people have been in treatment for at least 3 weeks before you have them assessed, because sometimes the withdrawals from the drug can look like mental illness too.
Mm-hmm.
So that you wait a couple of weeks before you get them to get a true assessment from a psychiatrist.
Gotcha.
Nice.
And where you work right now, it's an outpatient facility, right?
Yes.
So do you, like, is it kind of helping patients transition from like an inpatient care and reassociate back into daily living, or is it patients that just, you know, are coming in for, you know, an outpatient visit here or there?
So it's a little bit of a couple of different combinations. Sometimes it's people who have gone to the hospital and they were detoxed, like from alcohol, opioids, benzodiazepines, your Ativan, Xanax, Klonopins. And while they were detoxed, then they recommended that they go into outpatient. So the good thing about our program is that we are connected to housing. There's a huge organization called Helping Up Mission, which is probably one of the top housing programs in the country. They have their own spiritual program where they help men and women with children get recovery. But we have a contract at Johns Hopkins to have some of their beds. And so awesome. They may come from the hospital. They may come from a residential treatment center. They could come from the jail. They could come from the courts. Sometimes the courts will recommend they go into treatment, or they may stop monies that they might be receiving, particularly for females who might be on public assistance. So they can come a variety. Sometimes people just walk up the street and say, hey, you know, I was told about this program and I want to come in. So sometimes families find out about it and tell their loved ones, hey, go over there. to the Broadway Center, you know. So we can get referrals from a lot of places.
Nice.
That's awesome. Sounds like a definitely a big undertaking where you probably see a lot of things.
Yeah. This July will be 18 years working there.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's cool.
That's really incredible.
Yeah, thank you. And I've seen a lot. It definitely is book worthy. I would have to change the names and all that stuff, but
yeah.
Just yeah. Make everybody's name Zach.
They make them all Zach.
Yeah, why not? It's an okay name.
That's cool. Cool. is that biblical for you too?
It's not for me.
I don't know if it was a biblical inspiration that where my parents got the name, or if it just was one that they liked. Because I'm Zachary, not Zachariah. So I'm not sure if it was biblical inspiration or not
for it.
But I'm real curious how. Right, so you said you've been working in the realm of addiction, and now you're moving into like speaking engagements and book writing. How did that start up? What was that kind of transition, or did it come out of your career in nursing, like an opportunity present itself to speak, or did you take the initiative to try to like write the books or go find somewhere to speak? How did that transition happen?
I would have to give credit to my pastor, Dr. Kenneth Robinson. He is a pastor who teaches about living for God, but also entrepreneurship and finding your purpose in life. And so been in the ministry now for 22 years. Over the years, just watching and listening to his message just helped me to kind of hone into, you know, what is my gift, what is my assignment. And when I started writing books, I did a book about my mom, just to kind of like a memoir. That was the start of it. And then I did a book about mixing, about healthy relationships. I worked in HIV care, so I wanted to kind of set some things straight about that. And and at the same time I wrote that book, I was also thinking about, like, would someone be interested in hearing me talk about substance use? I mean, I give talks at Hopkins every week, but I was thinking, would someone outside of Hopkins listen to me? And so I started this business in 2011, and I gave free talks for 2 years. I just went up to people and said, hey, would you like to have a talk? And I don't charge you, you know? And and so they, you know, it was like, sure, come on in, you know?
That's awesome.
And that's really cool.
Yeah. So I did that. And one day I went to a shelter to ask them if they had a need. And an idea came to me, I think it was a God idea, to mail a book to the lady. And I mailed her the book called Mixing, which was my second book. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she got it, she called me in and said, hey, I want to give you a tour. And she says, when do you want to start talking? And I was just blown away, like, okay, like they actually want to pay you for this, you know? So
yeah.
So that started in 2013. And from there, I've been just given the talk. I'm still at that shelter. Still talking there. And I go to a residential center over in West Baltimore, and I give I give like two back-to-back talks, one and then one and two. So it really got started from just watching his example and just stepping out there and really just learning like what it takes, you know, making all the mistakes and making them for free. You know, the clients didn't pay a dime, you know, but I was learning. I was learning.
Yeah.
So now, you know, I feel like, hey, I'm still learning, because even after I give talk, like recently I started realizing to tell the audience what you're going to talk about. Like, mm-hmm. these are the three main things you're going to talk about. And the thing about people with substance use, when you're educating them, their minds are still healing. Their brains are still getting well. And you can't inundate them with a lot of information. Like, you have to say, hey, this is what I'm going to talk about. And then in the middle of it, you got to say, hey, this is what we talked about. Then at the end, you got to say, hey, guys, did you appreciate us talking about blah? You have to keep saying it, because
re-emphasizing.
Yeah, re-emphasizing. Because as much as they want to retain it, drugs and alcohol has delayed them being able to really process information properly. Yeah.
Wow. That's good. I'm curious with your work as a nurse with the speaking engagements that you have. What do you feel like is the most rewarding, or one of the most rewarding things of working in this field?
The most rewarding is when I see someone who has stopped drinking, stopped drugging, beginning to. Sometimes I'll hear someone say, "Hey, Mr. Joe, I got my own room," or "I got my own apartment." I mean, they're grown men, and some would say, "What's the big deal? You're 50-some years old. You should have been had an apartment." But they don't know that those years of using like really kept their lives unmanageable. So I would say the biggest excitement is to see someone. I would probably have to say someone not drinking anymore, because I think it just reminds me of my mother, you know. And particularly like when I see women who come in treatment and they are drinkers, alcohol users, and then I see them get in recovery and really get it together. And I'm reminded of a patient who was an opioid user and an alcohol user. And we actually discovered the alcohol use just from some times when they were presented in the clinic. And almost a reminder of Billie Holiday. When you say the word Billie Holiday, most people think of what drug? What drug comes to your mind?
I'm not sure.
You ever heard of Billie? Okay, Billie Holiday was a jazz singer.
I was gonna say
I know the name,
youth
but
a little too much.
Okay. Sorry about that. Well, Billie Holiday was a famous blues singer.
Okay.
And she actually had some time here in Baltimore, and they did a movie about her called Lady Sings the Blues. But she was known for opioids. She was a big heroin user. But what people didn't know was that later in her life, she resorted to alcohol. She actually died from cirrhosis of the liver and heart damage. And so in the last stages of her addiction, she switched from opioids to alcohol, which alcohol and opioids are both depressants. They both slow the nervous system down. And so so sometimes when I see like women in treatment, I think that like tugs at my heart probably the most, you know. but I'm happy for any accomplishment my patients make. And I'm happy, like sometimes I'll just say to them, "Thank you for coming back." And they'll say, they say, "Mr. Joe, why do you say coming back?" I'm like, "You didn't have to come back, you know, like, you know what, you know, pulled you into the treatment center." And, and then when they start getting their stuff together, and then sometimes when I'm out in the community, I see a patient and they're like looking good, and, you know, they got the company truck, and, you know, they're so excited, Mr. Joe, Mr. Joe. And you know, they tell me what they're doing now. And some of them still take medicine sometimes to help with their recovery. Some of them take Suboxone or maybe methadone.
Mm-hmm.
But they're accomplishing things, you know, they're being that father, they're being that brother, you know, and I'm just so excited when I see it. And I hear stories and see testimonies all the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. And, you know, thanks for sharing that part too, because I mean, I think it just goes to who you are as a person, though, honestly, even from the short conversation. You know, anybody mm-hmm. could have been like, oh, the most rewarding thing was the book or the speaking or the this and the that. And it's just like it goes back to your core beliefs of the most rewarding thing is seeing people get better and turn their lives around. And that's just awesome.
Yes. Absolutely.
So what do you have going on? I know you talked a little bit for the future about retirement, talked about your speaking engagements and stuff. Kind of what are you hoping for, or where are you wanting to take this career of helping people with substance abuse and recovery and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I'm hoping to reach as many people as possible. Denzel Washington said, you can only affect your circle of influence. And so I'm trying to expound my circle of influence. I want to appreciate you guys for having me come on, because I'm like,
absolutely,
wow, Joe, you're doing a podcast. This is crazy. You know? And, awesome. You know, between books, I mean, I started a podcast with my wife. It's called Alcohol, Drugs, and Us. And I'm a little bit of time kind of trying to perfect that. I did go out and grab me a microphone and some headphones. And,
yeah.
So I'm trying to reach as many people as possible. Sometimes, one time I was praying and I felt like the Lord said, you're not working hard enough. Like you're not burdened. You're not as burdened enough. And I thought about it. I said, when I was 10 years old, asking my mom not to drink, like I had no resources. I had no one I could, you know, I couldn't call anyone and say, tell her to stop that, you know?
Right.
You know, I didn't know how to pray. I mean, I didn't know anything except just a conversation, the two of us, with tears running down my face. And and for some reason, you know, my tears and maybe other things, you know, caused her to look at the woman in the mirror and seek out some kind of help. I had a sister who was really angry with me when I made that statement, because she said, well, you felt like, you say mama changed because of you. Well, I say it because that's the promise she made, that she wasn't going to let me grow up watching her that way. That was something she personally said to me. Now, it could have been other factors, but that's what I took away. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, am I sticking to your question?
Oh, absolutely. And
I'm saying, like, wait a minute, did I answer that? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. He's used to having conversations with me, and I never stick to topics. So you're doing great.
Well, and I just want to say, one, thank you for coming on our show, and we are super excited and happy to be a part of that. You know, you're talking about broadening your circle of influence. You know, while we're no big time podcast, but I'm happy that we can be a part of that journey and a part of that growth. Definitely. to help you broaden that circle and influence more people, touch more people, and ultimately help more people. That's awesome. been super encouraging hearing your story and how you've grown from, like that story you said, from a 10-year-old to now where you've spent a lifetime helping and influencing people and helping people recover, and now you're just taking another step in that journey to bring people to some freedom. That's you've got a fantastic story. I'm really excited that you came on our podcast. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You're welcome.
Yeah. Do you have any other
questions? I mean, the only other thing I just want to add is, you know, as you were talking, the thought kind of popped in, like, even when you brought up retirement, you know, in 8-9 years or so, it wasn't even, you know, retirement for a sedentary lifestyle. It's retirement and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to be able to talk more and I'm going to be able to do more things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's super encouraging to hear, as, you know, even a younger person, just, you know, that there's always going to be something for you to do. You don't have to do nothing. Like I see, I don't know, like retired athletes always pop into my head, because what happens to them, vast majority of them, they lose their money or get out of shape because they become sedentary and they're not doing something to either better themselves or better others. So, you know, I appreciate you sharing that with us. And just to echo what Zach said, it was, you know, you didn't have to come on the podcast of two people who just started 9 months ago in upstate New York, but you did. It was really fun just having a conversation with you.
Absolutely. I've been talking about you guys for a while. You see, last week I was almost trying to be on the show last week. You know, I had my
yes. I got that email. We have a small group with a few guys from church and our pastor, and I got the email in the morning and I was like, What day is it? And I pulled up my calendar quick and I was like, okay. If I screwed up somehow, I'm just going to have to make it work. And then you responded, "Oh, it is next week." I was like, "Okay, thank God we're on the same page."
So, Joe, where can people find you if they want to, you know, get a hold of some of your books, if they want to listen into your podcast, where can people go to get connected with you?
Okay. So, I have a website, it's, McCray Lectures. I have a YouTube, it's called, Addiction Treatment with Mr. Joe.
Okay.
I have the podcast, Alcohol, Drugs, and Us. N is just the letter, capital letter N, Us. Mm-hmm. And then my email is joseph@mccraylectures.com. So then I guess Facebook too, you know, all of that. So,
perfect. Yeah. Awesome. But,
definitely the website.
I'll make sure I put the website and the YouTube and, you know, podcast stuff in the
put some links
in the description of the podcast here and everything.
Great. I appreciate you guys. I've been telling people all the time, I'm gonna be on this show with this guy from named Zach. He's up in Upper New York.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and we appreciate it too, because the more that you know, you share it, helps us build our platform, and then also we're happy to be here to be able to help you build, you know, your platform too. So I'm hoping that we both are able to reach out and touch people with this message. So we appreciate you a lot.
Sure,
coming on here.
So what made you guys get into podcasting?
That's a great question.
Yep.
I'd wanted to do one for a couple years, mm-hmm. and I've had issues with anxiety for a very long time. And so I just always thought, like, why bother? It's going to fail. And then the more I got my anxiety under control, the more I needed a creative outlet for what my brain was doing. Yeah. That's how it felt. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do it, because now to me, failure is not doing something because of what other people might think. Mm-hmm. Like that's what constitutes failure to me. Right. And to make an even longer story shorter, Zach was marrying one of my friends, and one of the first times I met him, we kind of joked about doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And then June actually end of May 2023, I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start a podcast. And he's was one of my first guests. And people were just like, you guys have such good chemistry. And I realized I really didn't want to do it alone. So I was like, how about you co-host this thing? And yeah.
And I had come on for 2 or 3 episodes, and we just got a lot of positive feedback on it. And so he asked me to come on, and I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy hearing people's stories, and that's kind of, you know, his inspiration was, you know, what type of podcast? Well, I just want to share my life with other people and hear about their lives, and and that's where
the name came from.
You know, my life, your life together. We're just sharing each other's stories and experiences together, whether that be funny stories and goofy stuff, or, you know, life-changing things like this, or you know, whatever it may be, whether it's sharing faith, things like that. We like just coming together and hearing from people and being able to turn it into a platform where we can share it. So
that's good. Yeah. That's good stuff. And how did you, how do you go about getting your guests?
So the first 20 something guests we had were mostly all just people I know.
Yeah. Just like and friends.
Like I'd reach out and be like, hey, you know, like I reached out to Zach because we're both named Zach. We both have type 1 diabetes. So it was all about diabetes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I knew friends who with struggles of anxiety or depression, so they came on. Thankfully, I'm blessed with friends who are comfortable sharing these, like, vulnerable things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we have another friend who, you know, we just discussed movies with for mm-hmm. some episodes. And then I had posted in the group that I commented on your post on, I had put a post in there 2 weeks before, you know, just saying, you know, looking for guests to talk about this stuff. And I was just, I had so many people reach out. You're our third remote recording. Like, I haven't done very many of these. So, yeah. You know, like the kinks with the echo in the beginning, still learning everything about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But the, yeah. That Facebook group, I got a lot of feedback from. And, so I ask anywhere. And, you know, I had a bunch of people reach out, some of the people. I was talking with them, and it wasn't a good fit, but you know, that's fine. I'll turn over every rock to find somebody to talk to. And you ask my wife, I'll talk to a wall. The wall will get bored of me too.
So,
I just, you know, I like Facebook. I like using my friends, and hopefully the more guests I have and or guests we have sorry and it get, like word gets out there, you know, we'll be able to meet more people and share more stories.
Right. Yeah, I looked at your podcast. It looks very organized, very clean, and
that's all him.
I
worked and really I saw hard
like you had like were you were those different RSS feeds?
So on my website, So on the website, I use a Durable as the company. It's pretty easy to get a hang of building the website. But, I just did the RSS link to the show through Buzzsprout for all my Apple podcasts. I could link individual episodes, I was having issues with formatting the website that way because I don't know anything about that stuff. So I just did one big media player of the RSS link of the show.
Okay.
And, you know, if people don't use Apple Podcasts, I'm trying to figure out how to get Spotify on there too. But for now, at least people can go on it, see the name of the episode, and then type it into Spotify and find it or on YouTube now. So.
Yeah. Now, you said Buzzsprout. I saw a YouTube video. A guy was talking about Buzzsprout. Is that a real good platform?
It's the only one I've ever used, but I did a ton of research. So one time I had to buy coasters. I researched coasters for a week before I bought the set of coasters. So I research everything.
That's good.
But yeah, I love Buzzsprout because it is super user friendly. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most affordable. They have like a couple add-ons. I do one of them, which just helps, you know, with the quality of the audio. And then it's a hosting platform. So the second I publish it on Buzzsprout, it gets sent out to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, at any platform that you want it to, basically.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's good information, because the guy was talking on YouTube, and I said I wanted to inquire if someone else knew about Buzzsprout, so that's good that you use them. What are your thoughts about Spotify?
I never use it. I know from what I talked, well, not talked, but see a lot of people about, Spotify's kind of redoing their Spotify for podcasters.
Yeah.
I think if they're doing away with Spotify for podcasters and turning it into something else. Hmm. I mean, it's a huge company, so you know, I gotta assume they're reliable. But I mean, Buzzsprout posts it to Spotify for me. It posts it to Apple Music for me, okay, or Apple Podcasts. Okay. That's what I like about it. I hit one button. I'm a simple man, so if I can just hit one button, I'm good with it.
Yeah, it's the best way to do life.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have any questions about, you know, stuff with your podcast or whatever, I by no means know everything, but I'm happy to help. And I'm in a lot of Facebook groups about it too that are super useful. Like, I had to ask a question about remote recording, and I posted in one of the groups, and I had like 6-7 comments with recommendations and step-by-step, you know, troubleshooting stuff. So
gotcha.
There's a lot of resources out there. It's awesome.
Great. So what are you all hoping to accomplish?
Oof.
That's a great question.
We talk about this all the time. Like he shared the vision that we had, is just, you know, connect with people. I want to build relationships with people. Okay. You know, that's just part of who I am. I like building relationships, but also what I think, you know, the Lord has put on both of our lives is to, you know, work and use our talents and gifts for, you know, the kingdom and the blessing of the Lord. Yeah. So I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to make money from this someday, but that's not, you know, my overarching goal.
Okay.
I think for me, the answer to that question is really, I want to be able to help people. And I know that sounds super generic,
okay,
but the way that I look at it is, okay, we started off talking about our experience as type 1 diabetics.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be able to reach hopefully someone out there that maybe is going through the same struggle. We've had people on talking about depression. Okay, hopefully that's going to be able to touch someone out there that's struggling with that. You know, we've brought you on talking about your experience working with people through addiction. Hopefully that'll be able to point people to resources or to see, you know, things about that. And even if it's like some of the goofy episodes that we have, because we do some that are, you know, related to movies or things, and they're just kind of funny and not, you know, they're more lighthearted. If that's able to give someone, you know, a good laugh and, you know, entertainment for a moment, I want to be able to do something that's going to help people in a myriad of different ways, you know.
Okay.
And so kind of, you know, it may not be laser focused to one topic, but I look at it as, hey, we can bring people on that can learn something. And then find resources or be connected to different people that they can go more in depth, or they can just come on and have a good laugh for, you know, a half hour and, you know, cheer someone up. So yeah. I don't know. That's kind of my idea for it.
Okay. It's good. I'm learning from you all too, you know. So
that's something. Hey, we love it. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm a.
And do I'm you big do you do you? It's like you have like several podcasts on your website. Do you try to do like 2 to 3 a month, or is it set amount?
Originally, I wanted to do them weekly, and then it was hard towards the end of last year.
Okay.
But weekly is really what I want to do, and thankfully he shares the same sentiment as me. So, for a while it was hard because one of the Buzzsprout subscriptions was 3 hours a month, and we are very long-winded. Like, most of our episodes are 45 minutes plus. A lot of them break an hour. I don't like editing things out because, again, I like the conversation feel. So, you know, we've upgraded that subscription a little bit. Now we get 6 hours. Now we can talk about whatever we want for however long we want. And this year we have done one a week. And, we try to keep at least 2 episodes in the chamber. I call them in case of emergency episodes. That means, oh crap, I didn't have time to actually edit a long episode, so I'm going to kick out this 20 to 30 minute goofing off episode that still brings joy and entertainment. But yeah. So I think once a week is our goal, and we're doing pretty good on it going into March.
Yeah.
Good. And, are your listeners like aware that like your episodes come out on Mondays or Fridays or?
Yeah, so every Wednesday. Every Wednesday. I mean, I try to spam as much as I can on social media. You know, the Facebook banner says every Wednesday. I do, like, leading up to when this comes out, I'll do a teaser post. I'll do a post the day before, and then I'll do a post either the day or a couple days after as just a reminder. I'm trying to get better with, like, social media videos of, like, just, like, updates on Saturday, what we did this week going forward and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's kind of like... Right, there's the podcast side of it where we're actually doing, you know, recording the episodes, and then there's the social media, which is almost like the marketing side of it, you know. Yeah. Like we've been talking about soon I'm gonna be trying to break into TikTok and start expanding into that form of social media so that we can get more, you know, become more visible, which brings more listeners, things like that. So, yeah.
Wow, that's good. Cause so you have to do the podcast, then you have to edit the podcast, then you have to promote that you're putting out the podcast.
Yep. And I will say, and giving credit where credit is due, that is, Zach here has carried the vast majority of that workload so far, so he's done a phenomenal job. That's also why when you said, hey, it looks nice and clean and polished, I was like, that's this guy. He's a hard worker and he's got a knack for it. So
yeah, that's good stuff.
I enjoy it, and you know, there I'm learning how to use tools effectively, because like there's great things on, you know, Facebook or Meta Business Suite where you can schedule posts. So I've been trying to like do a whole bunch of posts, get them exactly how I want them, then schedule them for, you know, Monday at 7 a.m., Wednesday at 12 p.m., Friday at this, Saturday at that.
Okay.
I don't always do that. Sometimes it's hard, but, you know.
What's your username on Facebook? Well, I think I'm your friend now.
Yeah, we're friends.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, that's my personal Facebook, and then I have we have the Facebook for the podcast, Instagram for the podcast, and the website. But I mean, you got the inner circle now. You got my personal Facebook. you can get a hold of me any time of day now.
Okay, so your Facebook podcast is that where you announce when you're going to post a podcast, and you put the actual podcast on Facebook?
No, I just announce where it is and where people can listen to it. And I really only ever say Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Maybe I should put the YouTube link in there. You can put links on there. I don't know if you can actually have it play on Facebook. I've never tried.
Oh, right.
I do it this way through the RSS link to listen to it, because then you can track how many listeners you have.
Yeah. I've seen that, like how many views from a podcast. But I'm just kind of like right now willy-nilly posting stuff, and you know, not really any real organization. I'll definitely get better, but I just kind of throw it up. But I like that you keep with the time and the date. I mean, the time of the week that you're going to post it, and you're letting people know that, hey, expect a podcast this Wednesday. I don't think I could do every week, but I think I can at least keep to twice a month. And then I'll try to pick a day. Like, I mean, I do a Facebook on the second and fourth Thursday, but I would have to edit that and then put it in a podcast, like maybe the following week. But you gave me some ideas. That's good.
Okay. Everybody I talked to told me I was absolutely insane for trying to commit to doing it weekly. And I was like, oh, it can't be that much work. It's insane. I 100% don't recommend it unless you feel strongly about doing it every week, because it's an obscene amount of work. I work full time. I'm back in school, basically full time, and then we're recording, and then I'm editing, and my wife is, I don't know, 5 months pregnant now.
Yeah.
So we're getting the house together for our first kid.
Congratulations!
Thank you. So yeah, it's wild, but it's my passion, it's my hobby, and I'm just so passionate about it. So is Zach. So
yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do it. And seriously, you know, reach out to me if you have, you know, questions or just want to pick my brain. Like I said, I don't know everything, but you were a super awesome guest and super fun to chat with. And we'll happily talk to you anytime you want.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate that. I really do.
You got it. Thanks everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed Joe's story as much as Zach and I did. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't, tough luck, it's our podcast. No, it really was great. Thank you so much. I know we've said it a lot so far, but we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. I encourage everybody listening, check out his website, check out his YouTube, check out his podcast,
yeah,
and the books, like everything. And maybe expect another episode or two, you know, with Joe sometime in the future, because like I said, we had a fun time.